You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I'm joined by Hugo and I'm Josh, and we're here to talk to you today about regulation.
Hello. And yeah, so this topic is something that might sound a little bit dry, but it's not dry. And I'm going to convince you that it's not dry because I'm going to be taking it from a very specific perspective, right? So when you talk about regulation, what is often meant by that word is simply the state going around and saying, okay, you can't do this, you can't do that, right? This is restricted because of some reasons, and that's it, right? So you might have discussions about specific pieces of legislation, of regulation, whether that's good or bad, and you might have probably most of our viewers saying, okay, it's probably better to have less regulations in most areas. You might have the opposite with some other group of people. Fine, no, but that's not really that interesting. So we're not going to be talking about a specific piece of legislation or legislation that would be kind of concrete in one area, right? We're not going to be talking about whether financial derivatives should be restricted or not, right? That's not interesting.
So
it's not as interesting.
So we're going to be looking at the kind of theory and philosophy of regulation, maybe.
We're going to be taking it from a more wider point of view. So how I'm going to define regulation is different than just some kind of delegated state agency making up some rules for market participants, right? I'm going to say that regulation is any restriction on what people can do.
Okay.
And any restriction that is reasonably enforced, you're able to enforce it to a reasonable extent, right? So that's my definition. Some people might not agree with that definition. That is fine. You know, that's not really important. If we set a definition, then we can talk about that, and it doesn't matter what words we're using, or it shouldn't, right?
So it's just any limitation on what people can do, irregardless of whether it is kind of legislation or perhaps some kind of social norm.
Yeah, exactly. And you touched a little bit on what we're going to discuss, that there are different modes of regulation. You can regulate in different ways and through different means. And so I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but this is exactly correct. And so I'm going to say something a bit controversial. And I think just because we're using different definitions and I'm using my own definition that I've just said here, this is going to be full of takes that someone can take out of context in a clip, and it's going to look really bad, but I'm going to be enjoying it nonetheless.
Okay, looking forward to this.
So I'm going to say that regulations are the basis of society. And
I kind of get where you're coming from already.
I'm going to qualify that, right?
Sure.
Yeah, but ahead. No, ask away.
So the basis of society in that for people to come together and cooperate, you've got to have some kind of rules to be able to do so. Otherwise, it's going to degenerate in its structure, not just...
Exactly. Yeah. So when people say that, okay, regulation is bad because it's limitation on what you should be able to do or something like that, right? Fair enough. You know, that's not what we're talking about, right? That's not the definition that we set out. And so you could say that, yeah, all regulation is bad, but they're just semantics, right? You can say, you could redefine that as like regulation being, yeah, the state action that I don't like. Sure. But that's not what I mean. So if you define it as any restriction on anyone, you have to then differentiate between good regulation and bad regulation, right? Because, very easy examples. No murder is a regulation that is good. No eating is a regulation that is bad. You know, that's I picked a very non-controversial examples in that, right? And under my definitions, both of those are regulations to some extent, because you're limited in what you can do. Your conduct is regulated.
So just to be a bit of a pedant here, would you say the need to eat is a form of regulation in and of itself under this definition?
Yep. Okay, so I'm talking about social phenomena now. Not talking about natural influences on what you're able to do and what not, right? You can't fly. like without an airplane, right? You can't fly. That's not a regulation because there's no social imposition of that rule on you. It's just a natural fact. And so the fact that you have to eat is just as well a natural fact, which is not something that we're talking about.
So these are things that are excluded from the realm of your definition of
regulations. We're talking about social restrictions, not natural ones. Yeah, and, but that's an important kind of thing to clarify because you can be very oppressed by nature, right? You can be very much restricted in what you have to do and what you can't do just by the nature of your surroundings and your environment. If you're in the middle of the desert, it places very severe restrictions on you in terms of what you can do, what you can afford, and what you can risk and what you can achieve, right? And so if you're alone in the desert and you can have to survive in some ways, well, so yeah, you're very, very much oppressed by nature, but that's not a very good definition of oppression. And it's not, you're regulated very, very much by nature, but that's not a very good definition of regulation.
It's also not particularly useful to talk about it in those terms because I think everyone understands that this is a limitation that's separate from what you would use the term regulation for.
Exactly.
Like it seems like a bizarre usage of it just from a semantic point of view.
And so Just a little bit of a tangent, you can, of course, do something about those natural circumstances, right? If you're alone in a desert, you're placed in a very bad situation and you have to conform to what nature demands of you very closely because otherwise you're going to die. But if you build a city there, well, you're not that much anymore, right? If you have an air-conditioned hotel in the desert, well, then you're not as much oppressed by nature in that situation anymore, right? So you can do things about it, but that's just, I digress, right? And so we need to differentiate between good regulation, bad regulation. So it's social imposition on your behavior. No murder is good. No eating is bad, right? Just in terms of regulations. And so we have those two camps or groups of regulation. And we need to now find out where the kind of line lies between those. What is good regulation and what is bad? Because obviously not all regulation is as clear as no murder or no eating, right? So there is a huge gray area in which you're not really sure whether it's good or bad. It might be good according to some people and bad according to others. So you have to find a way to be able to tell between those. And so when we kind of create this framework of thinking about regulation as in any imposition, social imposition on your behavior or restriction on your behavior, it's not about whether to regulate more or less, not strictly speaking. So it's not the same kind of discussion that we're having when we're talking about, okay, we're in the situation, political situation that we have now, and we want to regulate the economy a lot because some goals we have, or we want to deregulate the economy, right? That's not what we're talking about. This is a discussion that is different because we're talking about how to regulate well. So how to regulate those things that you want to regulate, such as no murder, and how to not regulate those things that you don't want to regulate, such as eating, right? And so this is about how to regulate well, and you can rephrase that as how to do less of bad regulation. And so what we kind of arrive at when we think of it like this is that you want an alignment between what people want and what they get, the regulation they get, right?
That's because pretty simple, yeah. I imagine you're going to get onto this in a second, but when you say what people want, that's usually a very disparate thing, and there's lots of different things. So how would you break that down, or are you going to get onto that in a second?
So I'm going to say that you have some things that people want and some things that they don't, and then you can either have those regulated according to that or not, or have regulations set up in a different way. And then I'm also going to talk about a little bit what it actually means that people want something, that if the people want something, well, those don't have to be homogeneous. Those can be lots of different groups that each of which want a lot of different things, and those can go against each other, things like that, right? But I'm going to actually talk more about that tomorrow. So So for now, I'm just going to say, just for simplicity's sake, just to make the situation easier, to be able to better see where it leads us before we can actually make it more realistic, right?
Okay.
So I'm just going to say, okay, there is one thing that people in general mostly want and some things that they mostly don't. And so if you want to achieve that alignment, you have different ways to, you know, get it or not get it, right? And then we're going to get on to what types of regulations you can actually have. And so so if you, you know, accept that framework that I laid out here of what regulation is and what it actually aims to do and what you should want to do, as in good regulation and not less or more regulation, right? Then you kind of implicitly have to accept also that my claim that regulation is the basis of society because of that murder thing that I was talking about. You know, if you don't have any restrictions on what you can do, you don't have a society, right? And
that's,
so
pretty uncontroversial. Like there are lots of things that are common in all societies, yeah, in that, like, you prohibit murder and theft. Although I imagine some people will be like, well, in communism, the state stole people's property.
Yeah.
But fair enough. But in general, you know,
you forbid theft from the state. So
yeah,
it's just a different owner.
There's all of these laws that you could even, some people can make a claim to say they are almost natural laws, although I don't know how I really feel about that.
No, I agree with you that, for example, the prohibition against murder, except for specified reasons, right, is universal. Because, I mean, it makes biological sense. Makes kind of evolutionary sense. At the same time, even if it wasn't like that, society would still be defined by the regulations that it places on on the individuals that make it up. So even if societies didn't share a couple of these regulations that are imposed almost universally across cultures, even if those were completely different, the respective societies would still be defined by the limitations that they put on their members.
Yeah.
And so if you accept that, then you by implication also have to accept that the kind of regulation that you have makes your society what it actually is. So the kind of personality or the identity that your society has, that comes from the set of regulations, the set of rules that are imposed upon the members of that society, right? That's going to be one of the strongest factors in how you identify what a society is, what it's about, what its nature is. I don't know if you agree with that, you know, statement or not.
Well, I can kind of see a bit of a conflict, but I'm not sure whether it's actually a conflict or not here, in that there are some regulations that might be universal, but there's traits of different cultures that approach these things very differently. So in, say, regulations about murder, just to carry on talking about that, there's lots of different ways in which people treat a breach of that regulation, and is this down in part to the culture, or is it kind of the chicken or the egg, is it cause or effect, that sort of thing. I'm just trying to think of how you can have the same regulations but a different society.
Right. That's kind of what I'm saying, though, is that you can differentiate societies and you can define those societies based on the rules that they have. And if they have a lot of different rules, you would consider them quite different societies. And if their rules are very similar, you would consider them similar societies. So that is one of the major defining characteristics of a society or a culture, maybe, is the rules that it imposes on its members.
And
the kind of rules.
And you're saying that the society defines its regulations or its rules, and this is like a marker of telling the nature of the society, rather than the regulations shape the society.
I think both. I mean,
there is it's obviously a bit
mutually reinforcing. Yeah. I think, yeah. I mean, that's quite non-controversial statement, that you create society, you're going to shape the society by participating in it and by having relations with other people and changing those terms of those relations and by, you know, general progress of things, but also the rules that are already in place define or limit that kind of progress, right? So both of these things are happening at the same time, and it's not like there's one or the other, right? You know, or that one came first and then the other one came second.
Yeah, and I just wanted to be clear that you weren't necessarily arguing that, because I kind of suspected mm-hmm. that was what you thought, but to probably the people watching, they might think, well, he's saying that you need to regulate people to shape what they think, and I'm just preempting the misunderstandings there.
It's a very good point. I'm not saying that at all. So thank you for that. So this is not at all what I'm saying, because of how I'm using the word regulation. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm not using it in the sense of what some government agency is demanding market participants to do. Right? That's not what I'm saying. And so, I'm saying that the rules that the society has inside of it, it's those rules shape the identity of that society. And so you can, of course, if you impose some rules on it, you can reshape the society in a different way. But like that's an intervention from outside, which obviously can mm-hmm. be done and is often done, but it's not something that I want to really focus on, because sure. that's only a small part of what regulations can be. And so as we've already talked about quite a bit, we're not necessarily talking about state regulation. That was the premise of the whole discussion, is that thing in and of itself is not as interesting. But we're talking about any restriction on people's behavior. And so that can be in a couple of different ways. I'm going to talk about three ways in which you can do it. The first is state regulation, which we're familiar with and which I'm going to talk about only briefly. And then we're going to talk about two others. And those are going to be the cultural or social regulation. That's going to be the one thing. And then regulation by economic competition. And the last one, the economic competition, is going to be actually the topic for tomorrow, that we're going to talk about in more detail, because I think that is the most interesting one and most consequential one. So regulation by economic competition is going to be the topic for tomorrow. But we're going to touch on it now as well, because this is this kind of overview of how you can see regulation in a different way than it's how it's usually seen. Right? And so it's actually quite important from which source the regulation comes and what ways it manifests, because that what we said about the alignment between what the people want and what the people get in regulation is something that is vital, is something that is crucially important. And so if you have one of those ways or some ways that are better, that produce more of that alignment than others, then you want to prefer that if you actually want to have a good society, because that alignment is that goal that you want to produce, right? And so it is very important to look at those different modes of creating regulation, because the alignment is the goal, and you want to see whether those different kinds of those different modes of regulation produce that alignment or not, or whether they do it better or not. I don't know if you agree with that or not. This is something that...
Yeah, I think that it's a marker of judging how, I suppose, good, in mm-hmm. for want of a better word, regulation is, by how representative it is of the desires of the people it regulates. Mm-hmm. And I think that acknowledges the disconnect between the people who might set the regulations, who, I'm not necessarily talking about a government here, but in society, you obviously have people who are influential as well, and it is a very similar thing where it can be a top-down thing where you have these influential people shaping what other people think, and perhaps if these people were advocating for things that aren't really representative of what the majority of people think, then this might not be very good for the society as a whole.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I meant. And you said that those top-down things might be an indication of that probably not leading to that good alignment. But I'm going to say that this is not necessarily it, because you will always have those regulation makers being in some ways top down, because of the nature of regulation. It's an imposition on people's behavior. It's a limitation of it. So you have to have kind of a hierarchy like that to be able to actually put that in practice, to enforce it.
Yeah, and you have to have the power to enforce it. So there has to be some degree of top-down thing by necessity, and that's...
So we're not talking about the state, right? Not necessarily. Like, it can be a state, obviously, but it can be a different type of hierarchy, and it can happen purely in the social sphere, and there can be a different hierarchy that is absolutely not a state, right? And so it can happen a lot of different ways, so we're not necessarily endorsing one of the modes of regulation that you can have.
Right? I was thinking in particular how there doesn't necessarily need to be a state, in that some tribes, they have these kind of unwritten rules, and if you break them, you receive some form of punishment, but it isn't necessarily the so-called state or the tribal leader that dishes out the punishment. Sometimes the member in the society, who doesn't have to have any authority, can take it upon themselves to dish out the punishment, and that's something that seems kind of inherent in human nature to some respects.
Yep. And so let's start with the first category, which is state regulation. This is kind of the most straightforward. This is the kind of regulation that everyone imagines when they hear the word regulation. And that is just straightforward. An agency that has a lot of power in society just says, okay, now everyone, or this group of people, that group of people, will do this. Right? And it's quite straightforward, just because it is so clear of what's happening.
That's also the one where, if you say regulation, everyone assumes you mean state regulation. And that's the one that everyone has the common understanding of.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not because it would be the most spread one, most used one, right? I'm going to say that all of those modes exist simultaneously in society, and you can't really tell whether one is being used more or less, or whether one is really something that dominates a society or not. And obviously you have a lot of state regulation all around you, but that's not the way to tell that it's the one most used, right? And so with that state regulation, you have clear people who make the rules, and clear people who have to follow the rules. Doesn't have to be universal, is typically focused on a specific group, right? So people who grow bananas have to grow bananas that are of a specific shape, otherwise you can't sell them as under one trademark or something.
That was an EU regulation, wasn't it?
Yeah. So for Americans, that might be an interesting piece of trivia, right? There is a EU piece of legislation that sets what the curvature of a banana should be. Because otherwise you can't sell it as a great X banana, right? You have to sell it under a different label.
It's kind of ridiculous, really, because it doesn't affect the actual quality of the fruit itself. It's just the shape and how it's like playing into humans' own biases towards kind of picking things that fit the shape of it in their mind, if that makes any sense.
It reminds me of that guy who had the banana in his hand and was like, look, it fits perfectly into my joints. It's created by God.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
It's amazing. We'll put the video in the notes below so that you can watch it, because it's brilliant. Love it. It's so old, it's classic. Anyway, state regulation, the thing that we just brought up, the banana thing, right? It's interesting that you can always remember something like that, something really paradoxical or ridiculous, right? Something that shouldn't be the case, that a regulation that is in place that doesn't make any sense or makes very limited amount of sense. And so I think that's a little bit of a hallmark of what state regulation is, because it can, of course, produce something that people want, but at the same time, it tends to also produce a lot of things that people might not want, right? Like a regulation of the curvature of a banana. I'm sure that some people want it, that's why it's in there, but it's not something that would be universal or even majority desired.
Sorry to kind of belabor the point, but I think it's actually quite unhelpful to have that, because although it's playing off of something that people might want, in that people like things that look visually appealing to eat, and people kind of eat with their eyes first, if that makes any sense. But that's not a very rational way of looking at things, and it's not very healthy for you if you only eating specific foods. It's almost like you've got some kind of bizarre socially acceptable eating disorder where you've got to, it's like they also have regulations on carrots and stuff where they have to be perfectly straight. Yeah. And it's just like, why does it matter? Like,
that's why in UK supermarkets you have all these like wonky food, right?
Yeah,
like wonky vegetable, which is just the same thing but like curved or something. Like it's not according to the EU standards, because UK used to be in the EU and has all these rules as well.
I normally buy those just because they're slightly cheaper, even though you get more or less exactly the same thing. And I'm just like, well, if people are going to be ridiculous, then I may as well save some money from it.
Exactly. And so when I said that some people might want it, who I meant was not necessarily the consumers, because I think there's very few consumers who actually care about this.
I would beg to differ if it's on the wonky fruit thing. I imagine.
Oh no! No, I meant the specifically the curvature of banana. Like that. Like if we're looking at who wants that regulation to be in place, right?
I would actually imagine that there'd be a lot more support for it. That at least 30-40%
Yeah,
maybe.
But I mean now there's going to be a lot of support because now it's the status quo, so everyone's going to support it because of status quo bias. But but before that, if you propose it, who's going to promote it is going to be the producers who can do that much cheaper than their smaller competitors, right? And so if you can make your advantage more, if you can make your advantage bigger by putting this in place, which is a cost for you, but is a much lower cost than your competitors, you're in a much better position.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
I understand.
And you offset the cost to your consumers, so it doesn't matter anyway.
So it's a way of kind of artificially kind of making competition that is smaller than you kind of compete less with you, because a larger company is able to adapt to regulations more, which is why they actually might want more regulation than less when compared with smaller companies who cannot adapt as much.
And if you actually look at pressure groups on the government and maybe probably broadly left-wing groups that lobby for some kind of government regulation of something, right, that they are rarely successful. They are successful when they get support by large corporations, large companies, or large industries. And they get that support when some players in those industries or in those big corporations, when they realize, they do kind of crunch the numbers, realize that if the regulation is put in place, their costs will go up a little bit, but they will gain a lot more from it in terms of revenue because of the eliminated competition, right? So if you look in practice at how regulation is put into place, it's always put into place in a combination of kind of social pressure, not always, but typically, combination of social pressure, but it's not enough. You need the support of those big producers, big companies in one specific field.
And one of the unusual things I did notice about some of the US elections is that a lot of big companies supported more regulation on their own industries. And at first I was kind of taken aback, but the explanation of the regulations actually eliminate their smaller competition makes perfect sense in this example.
Yeah. And so you will always have big corporations being on the side of regulation because they're not competing against because they're competing against their smaller alternatives, and those smaller alternatives have more of like budgetary constraints about those things. It's the same thing with like the legal stuff, you know. If you can hire a team of lawyers because they make up a small percentage of your budget, then that's going to be much more affordable for you than if you still have to hire a team of lawyers, but they're going to make up 70% of your budget, but you still have to have it because of some legal requirements, right? The typical thing is financial regulation. Every bank or every financial institution basically has to have an office full of lawyers to kind of keep up with what's going on and to make sure that they don't then they don't get slapped by regulators.
Yeah. And it's almost a limiting factor in the free market to some extent, yep, in that it makes the barrier to entry to form a business much, yep, higher than it might otherwise be. Yeah.
And so just to reiterate, I think that's on purpose, right? That's on purpose because it's set up with the support and with the lobbying of those already big players that are established against those smaller players, because that's what they want to do. They want to increase their profitability, want their turf. It's fine, you know, that's natural. But the fact that they can do it and that there is a mechanism for them to do it, which is the government that is ready to be paid off and to do that, is something that is a problem, and that results in these types of results in things like the regulation of the curvature of banana in the benign sense, but in much more damaging regulations in some other spheres.
Yeah, because I imagine if you've got some kind of scientist mass producing bananas, they're all going to be in a very uniform shape. But yep, if you've got some kind of rural farmer in Africa, mm-hmm, he's not going to be able to sort out the shape of his bananas, mm-hmm, and therefore it's going to complicate things, yep, to the point where even though the mass production already had the advantage in the first place, in that, you know, you can produce more things at a lower
scale. Yeah,
yeah. And they already had that advantage in the first place. It's going to be even more when they add this regulation in, where this smaller business cannot. I am kind of belaboring the point here with examples, yeah, but yeah, it I think it is really important because it explains, yeah, something that a lot of people get wrong.
I just want to make clear once again that you can sell differently shaped bananas in the EU. That's fine, you know. Yeah, but you then have to do it under a different kind of standard. You have different regulations that apply to you if your curvature of the banana doesn't like fall into the guidelines.
It's a weird niche on a, yeah, wonky banana seller.
Exactly. And so you can still sell weirdly shaped bananas. It's not banned or anything. It's just different, more cumbersome circumstances. All right. So that was a fun detail, but I wouldn't want to spend too much time on state regulation because I think the other ones are more interesting, mm-hmm, especially when we talk about different forms of it and there's different conception of regulation that I outlined in the beginning. And so let's move on to the cultural/social regulation, because it's something that is not prescribed by law, right? Typically, that's not how it operates. It's defined by being a social unofficial force, even though it can be very strong, it can be very official looking, but it's not something that an agency with a lot of guns behind it is enforcing, right? So it doesn't mean that it's less serious. That's what I want to stress, right? Because like, let's take an example. If you do something that is, you know, slightly wrong and you get a 50 pound fine, well, okay, it's a bit annoying. You pay a 50 fine and you go about your life. But you might have the same thing that is somehow really offensive to the society around you, and you might be disowned for that, right? And so if you're disowned, well, that's a much worse consequence for you than like paying 50 pounds, right? And so just by the fact that it's not backed up by this state force doesn't mean it's less severe, because it can produce, you know, things like this. You know, it can be very influential on your life based on what happens with the people around you, with the people in your culture or society.
By disowned, do you mean just kind of cast out by the people you know, or, yeah, like exiled,
like your family or something? Like you're disowned, okay, because the family, like you do something really offensive to your family, and mm-hmm, and they're gonna like, I want to have nothing to do with you.
So, like in an example, if for some reason you were littering, and that would get you something about around a 50 pound fine, yep, in the UK. I'm not sure. I've never, yep, done it. But if you say did that in your house and you repeatedly did that, I imagine your family is going to get annoyed, and, yep, then they might kick you out. They're like, right, we're fed up of all this yep, rubbish on the floor.
And so just regardless of the context, mm-hmm, being kicked out of your house is much worse, presumably, than 50 pounds, right? And so that's just what I'm talking about. It's not less severe just because there's fewer guns behind it.
Yeah.
And so another example I have here is like, okay, 100 hours of community service versus being cancelled, right? would you rather?
Yeah. Well, in the modern day, being cancelled is actually quite good for you because lots of people will be like, oh, they've been cancelled, and then they get lots of support. So
it's quite fashionable in some circles, so it is, might be good for you. But it might be a bit annoying and stressful as well. So.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
And obviously, if it has some redeeming circumstances around it, doesn't mean it's good. Doesn't mean there's not a lot of bad things connected with it, just to like qualify, just to make sure that we're not saying cancellation is good.
Yeah, I did see an interview recently with Professor David Starkey, who's a historian. Mm-hmm. He was recently cancelled, but he said it was stressful for a couple of days, and then he realised that actually nothing had changed.
Yep.
So
only being cancelled if they convince you that you should cancel yourself in your own head.
Yeah. He was arguing that as long as you're just as confident in your own abilities, you can carry on doing what you're doing. And maybe it's a little bit more difficult, but nothing's going
to
stop you.
And that actually ties into what I wanted to mention now, is that the effectiveness of cultural or social regulation, that varies, right? It varies with the kind of society that you have. And if you have a rural society where you have people living in small villages and small communities, that will be much stronger. And that is a point that is non-controversial, it's kind of obvious. But at the same time, it's important to notice, right, what it produces. Because when I said you can't necessarily measure what type of regulation is predominant in your society, well, you can compare different societies and say, okay, state regulation has much more of an influence than cultural in this society, and it's probably the other way around here, right? The fact that you can't measure it objectively with numbers doesn't mean that you can't compare and say, okay, it's probably more here and less here, right? And so if you have those small-scale societies, small-scale communities, particularly if you have people that everyone, a situation where everyone knows each other, that's going to be something that is where that cultural and social regulation will have a lot of force, because those people can kind of talk to each other, and they can share their thoughts about what is serious and what is not serious, and what they can coordinate their responses in the same way that the state actually does, but in a more formalized way, right? So this, what the state does is, if you do something wrong, well, if you litter, right? Who says that you can't litter? Well, this piece of paper says that. And why does anyone pay attention to that piece of paper, that law? Well, because it had gone through this procedure that everyone respects. And who respects that? Well, a bunch of policemen respect that. And they say, okay, if that goes through this procedure, well, this is what we're going to do. And if they do it, well, then that puts the pressure on you, because then you get a fine. And if you don't pay it, they're going to break down your door, right? And so This is that kind of coordination that is produced by the legislative process is something that is more unofficial, but is produced in similar ways in the social sphere, in those small communities where everyone knows each other, because people talk to each other and they say, okay, well, this person is acting kind of weird. Like, what are they doing? Like, are we going to put pressure on that person? I don't like this. You know, it's annoying. You know, let's just like, let's slap him around a little bit, not necessarily violence, but I mean, let's make it a bit annoying for him to keep doing that thing that is annoying, right?
I can actually think of an example here where the social so-called regulation was actually probably far worse than the state one, in that I remember reading a story about how in a Brazilian favela, they caught a thief, and supposedly loads of the kind of locals just got around and started beating them with sticks until they died. And that's obviously a way worse punishment, even though it's unofficial, than the state. And in some cases, you know, I imagine most people when living in a developed Western country that are watching, this doesn't happen very much. So they want this more socially driven punishment, I would imagine. But my kind of inclination would be that comes with its own risks as well. Yeah. And I just want to warn people that advocating for that might not always be the best thing.
So particularly that it's not always that... If you have let's put it this way. If you have violence, you know, centralized and proscribed very strongly, you will have those cultural and social regulations being manifested in social behaviors and not violent behaviors, right? But if you don't have it like that, you can have violent social responses, not, you know, state-based, but the example with the favela that you said kind of fits into it, right? That is not something that would be like ostracism or something like that that you would typically connect with cultural or social regulation. Mm-hmm. It's violent, and that can be a thing. It's just something that is a step removed because of the lack of other means of enforcement that could be there.
Yeah, and I think it'd probably be fair to say that the punishment by the state in this case would be probably less severe than death.
Yeah,
I would imagine so.
Yeah. And so the flip side of that small community, the big, maybe city-based society, is very interesting to look at, because the more anonymous people get, the less effective that cultural and social regulation is. Right. And you can have that, the results of it can be positive and can be negative, as with all of this, obviously. And so you can have, for example, the positive influence of that can be that David Starkey can say, okay, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, and I'm not going to pay attention to someone not liking me and not wanting to host me on their platform, because I can simply talk to the people that like me, and I can still be a prominent personality, even if that group doesn't seem to like me as much, right? And he can do that just because you have this anonymous society, this mass society, particularly on the internet, that can do that. Because if you were in a small village where everyone knew each other and you were cancelled, well, you probably cancelled definitively, and you have to move somewhere else where people don't know you to restart your life, or if you want to keep doing what you're doing, right? And so that can be a positive thing, that you're not as much cancelable if the society is more mass, kind of, I don't know, mass based, or if it's more anonymous.
So if there's more of a population, mm-hmm. there's kind of like a threshold where obviously people don't know where it is, yep. where you can kind of cross, where the implications of, say, being cancelled are far less, because you're able to just kind of skirt around it and avoid the so-called consequences.
Yeah, because the society, by the virtue of everyone not knowing everyone else, is less coordinated, right? And of course it has different means of coordination, so there can be a platform that is going to say, okay, we in some ways coordinate millions of people because they are on our platform, so we can coordinate them by speaking for them. So if we ban you, well, then you're banned from this coordinated group of people that is on our platform, right? So you can rephrase it like that. But that is true, of course, but that doesn't mean that the pressure against that is not there in the mass society, right? So that it's, even if those things are there, it's much less of a big deal being cancelled in a society, in an mass society, an anonymous society, than being cancelled in a local, tightly knit society.
I think that's pretty uncontroversial.
Right, and so we've talked about that for a little bit, and let's move on then to the last mode of regulation that I wanted to briefly mention today, because that's what we're going to go into in more detail tomorrow, and that is regulation by economic competition. It is a bit of a tricky thing to talk about in this way, because we're used to thinking about the economy in some specific ways, and thinking about them in some different ways might be something that doesn't really come natural to people living in our societies, right? But I'm going to try to explain what I mean quite carefully, so that hopefully it's understandable. So regulation by economic competition is not prescribed by law, is the same thing as with social regulation, but is typically not so strict, right? It's not so strict as even often the social regulation. It's more of kind of tendencies. Sometimes it can be quite restrictive, but oftentimes it's more like that you still can do something that is on the margin, that is prescribed, but it's going to cost you more. It's going to be more inconvenient to do that, but you can still do it, right? And so in some ways, it is a it is more mild version of regulation, but it can be, in some cases, it can be really strong as well. And especially if you take, if you look at it from the societal level and you take into account those small influences that it has on individuals, well, if you add up those small influences into the whole product, like, you can see that it can have a massive impact on the society as a whole, even though it has maybe smaller influences on individuals than, let's say, state regulation.
So it's almost like the sum of all of the, I would almost call them financial incentives, in that they're not necessarily preventing you from doing something, but mm-hmm. they're making it more difficult or costly, and they all add up, and the cost adds up eventually to a point where it may not actually seem as large when you look at each piece of legislation in isolation, but when you view it as the whole, then it can be quite considerable and have a considerable effect on a society.
Yeah, something like that, but not necessarily connected to the legislation, because we're talking about economic sphere and economic tendencies, right?
I know, but that's just my own kind of biases slipping in there, in that when I think of
right.
regulations on the economy, I automatically think of state limitations.
And so what I mean, I'm gonna explain what I mean now, just to go through the process of how that regulation by competition works. So you have multiple rulers of and owners of kind of their own territory. Maybe it's some kind of property, maybe it's a field, maybe it's a street, maybe it's a park, maybe whatever, right? So you have, maybe it's a company that, I know, the taxi company, right? So you have all these different owners of different things, and they, each of them, set their own rules on their own property. And in this sense, those rules are as strong as the state-based legislation, because they can just kick you out or deny you service. They can say, okay, you're not welcome here unless you conform to these rules. So it's something that is, that might be just as strong. In some ways, you can say that it's the same thing. You know, if you have private owners of a small area of, I don't know, a hotel, where they have some rules where you have to follow those rules if you want to be in that hotel, well, you, in the same sense, you have the government, which effectively owns the whole territory, which then enforces its rules on it, right? So you have that kind of analogy. So it's similar, but there is a key difference between those two kind of views and those two spheres, because if you have a multiple different private owners that each control smallish thing, territory, I don't know, service, whatever, you have competition between them, whereas that doesn't happen with the government, at least not to the same extent, not according to the same movements or mechanisms. I'm going to explain more of that tomorrow. And so the key difference is that you can have one owner, one property manager that has some rules, but another one can set another one, just other rules just next to that first one. And if people like the second one more, they will more go to the second one than to the first one. And so the first one is going to probably want to change the terms of service, right? The rules that they set on their property, just to get that clientele back.
So there's a greater incentive to listen to the so-called customers here.
Exactly.
In that you're going to lose out in mm-hmm. terms of profits,
yep.
if you're not paying attention to
yep.
what people want out of your regulations.
So if you look at the single property owner, well, that's quite analogical to the state-based rules, to the state-based legislation, right? But you can't do that. You have to look at the whole environment, which is composed of a lot of different property owners, right? And so if you look at that whole environment, that whole system, because it is a system, it's different actors interacting with each other and producing some results, right, in that way. So you need to look at that whole system, not just at the individual property owner. And if you look at the whole environment, it produces different results. It produces different results than the legislation, the regulation by state. And it produces different results precisely because of what you said, because they have to react to the behavior of the customers. And so what you're looking at, rather than looking at specific behavior of a specific individual property owner, you're looking at the overall trends in private rule setting, right, regulation setting, because it's this kind of accumulation of those small fiefdoms that make up the system, but you can't take just one. You have to look at all of them. You have to look at the tendency among all of them, because and judge the result of that whole system and not of one specific thing. And so that's very different than when you judge a state and when you say, okay, look at this banana regulation, that's stupid, isn't it? Right. So you can't do that just by looking at one property owner and saying, okay, look at this hotel. You can't bring into this hotel bananas, right? You can't bring bananas to this hotel. It's just stupid. Like, why would you do that, right? But if you look at the like all the hotels,
mm-hmm.
in most hotels, you'll probably be able to have a banana because it's a stupid rule not to have banana in the hotel, right? And so that's the difference. That's the difference in how you look at the system, mm-hmm. How you measure or observe whether it's working or not.
To kind of ground that in a real world example, I know it's probably not so much the case anymore, but I know that in Japan, it's the custom to take off your shoes to go into a building that's owned by someone else.
Yep.
And it might be less unusual to request that, say, if you were staying in, it probably wouldn't be the case in a large Western style hotel, but if you go into like a bed and breakfast sort of thing that's perhaps only, you know, 8 rooms, mm-hmm. then it might be customary to do that. Whereas if you did were asked to do that in the UK, it might be a bit more unusual, although it is still somewhat of a custom and it's kind of a thing that is shaped by a society, but it's still in the economic sphere.
Yeah. And I'm going to actually talk about those differences more tomorrow because of like, different groups wanting different things and how that system deals with it, right? And so if we look at that regulation by competition, that can be quite strong because of what I said. You can have an impact on a lot of people that can be quite, maybe you can view it as weak on a single person, but if you extend that across a lot of people, it can actually be quite strong. And so it can have a lot of influence just as the legislation, the state-based legislation and regulation. So let me give an example, right? So let's say you live in a small town where there's only a handful of shops, right? There's no supermarket, there's a couple of corner shops, but that's it. You know, obviously, it's connected to the outside world, so you can travel and stuff, but you can't. But what you have in that town is limited. So everyone basically in the whole town, 90% of the people, 95% of the people want to eat healthy. Right? They are really obsessed with eating healthy. And so all the corner shops are gonna kind of take that as a signal. They will stock themselves with healthy food because that's what sells in that town. So there's going to be a lot of healthy food, right? There's not going to be a shop with junk food. There's not going to be some like a cheap shop where you can go and buy a lot of junk food because no one actually buys it in that town, right? And so if you actually are different than most of those people and you want junk food, you're not like no one says you can't eat it, right? But you're quite limited in what you can do. You are very much inconvenienced by it because what you have to do is, I don't know, order it online. It might be more expensive. You might need to travel to a different town. It might cost you gas, time, everything, right? And so you're inconvenienced by it. So no one's saying you can't do it, but it's some kind of pressure on you.
Yeah, the practical limitations seem to disincentivize that, even if it's something you want to do.
Yeah, and so you can see how it's a type of regulation in that sense. It's saying, okay, this is a rule. Like, it's not something that would be very strictly enforced, something you have to do it or you can't do it, right? It's not like that, but it is a rule. It's okay, we're eating healthy. And if you're if you don't want to eat healthy, well, then you have to pay extra, either in time or in effort or in money, whatever, right? And so it's a type of regulation as well. And of course, it can have significant effects if you look at similar forces, not just with the healthy food, but with all things in the economy and in society and with a lot of providers of a lot of different services, right? So you will have trends in the economy that are, if something is the trend, it's going to be the most convenient version. If you want to diverge from that, you have to pay extra.
Yeah, and I think that does extend to a much wider society in mm-hmm. that things that tend to be more popular tend to be cheaper as a general yep. rule, and things that are more niche tend to be yep. more expensive and specially exactly. made.
And so the same thing doesn't just work with customers, it also works up the supply chain, right? So let's take an example.
Excuse me.
Let's take another example of, for example, big supermarket chains have the ability to set the contractual standards of food manufacturing, food processing, or marketing, or whatever, right? And so if you have, you know, two or three big chains that make up 95% of the demand for the production of, I don't know, bananas, and they're going to say, okay, we want our bananas pretty, well, that's what the producer is going to do, mostly, because they want to sell to those who want to buy it from them, which, if the supermarkets say, okay, we will give you a better price for those bananas with that set curvature, like that's what the producer is going to do. That they're going to be incentivized in doing that. And so the smaller chains might be forced to do that as well, because now you have those farmers producing bananas of a certain curvature, but if those smaller chains want the curvature to be different, S-shaped bananas or something, there's not going to be that many of them being produced, because most of them have shifted to the curvature that the big supermarket chain want, right? And so that's the same kind of pressure that you have in that small town on you wanting to eat junk food, but it's the same kind of pressure on a step above.
It's almost like a step above in the supply chain. There's less competition. There's a greater pressure to conform to the standards that are imposed yep. on you.
Even if there's a lot of competition, but you have a lot of those big influential players agreeing on something, then that is set as kind of the industry standard that is not, strictly speaking, enforced, but it's something that is more mm-hmm. often followed than not, just because of its convenience. And so those, and as I said, I'm going to talk about those more tomorrow, that type of regulation more tomorrow, but regulation by competition and what it actually is and why it's, in my opinion, the best way that you can actually regulate things. And so what about some other modes, right? For example, can you think of some other modes of regulation?
I can't. Like, I was trying to think of some, yeah. just like... but
besides the state, the cultural, and the competition one.
No, I really can't. I've been trying to, but
so,
I just...
So what I'm thinking about, just one option, is that self-regulation could be considered
of course.
To some extent. It's something that is important if you talk about, if you research regulation, or self-regulation is one of the first thing that comes up. It's reasonable to consider it a different mode, but not really, because all of the other modes of regulation aim at achieving some form of self-regulation, right? Because that's what you want to do. You want to not rely on that threat of punishment all the time. What you want to do is to make people behave like that on their own, so that you don't have to spend your resources on actually enforcing it. So I would say that it's not necessarily a separate branch or separate mode of itself, just because all of the others kind of aim at that.
Mm-hmm.
The point of all the others is that.
I would probably say that my understanding of regulation is that it's something that is imposed on the individual, and in having the individual as the kind of lowest kind of thing that you can break it down to, further breaking it down to the limitations that the individual puts on themselves mm-hmm. seems a bit counterintuitive to me, in I know I'm a psychologist and I should know all about this sort of thing in, you know, self-limitation and self-regulation. That's something that I've covered, although under different circumstances. Right. But it doesn't seem intuitive to me that it would be something that you would include amongst these other things.
Yeah. Well, I think that the three that we talked about are actually quite comprehensive. That if there's any others, those can be there, of course. But if it's not something that comes to mind right now, it's not something that would be particularly important, I feel. Maybe it is. Maybe you can leave a comment there if you think there's another mode that we haven't discussed yet, and I'll be happy to discuss it in the comments. But I don't think that would be a big one that we haven't covered. Anyway, this was a kind of an overview of different modes of regulation and what I think is a more productive approach to what regulation is, rather than just saying, okay, again, repeating myself, just as like a state agency doing, like saying you can't produce these bananas, right? So this was an overview of those different modes. And so I'm just going to repeat what I said in the beginning, what I think is true in this framework, that regulation is what makes a society. It most makes a society what it is, what creates its identity, what defines it. And so the aim, again, is to have an alignment between the kind of regulation that people want and the kind of regulation that they can get and that they do get. And I'm just going to throw it out there that if the alignment is there, that is when people feel actually free in that society, right? Because they don't feel constrained, because that's something that they want to do. Something that they want to do and don't want to do is something that is actually prescribed by the mechanisms that set out the regulations in society. So people actually feel free when there is this alignment, not when there is very few restrictions on what people can do and can't do.
Yeah, because I think the aim, if you're being very charitable, of regulation is to actually improve the lives of the people and prevent them from having perhaps worse things imposed upon them. So I think of the example of if you had total absolute freedom where there were no limitations whatsoever, someone could just come along and steal all your stuff and there'd be no consequence if you couldn't take it back from them. Yep. Whereas when the state steps in, at least there's a chance of this being corrected, although probably in that example,
or some other mechanism.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's what today was about, right? Those different mechanisms that you can actually do something about, that or that a norm around that can be created and enforced. And so, but my point was specifically that people do feel free, and people will feel free when this alignment is there. And if this alignment is kind of, if it's misaligned, then people will feel less free. They might feel even oppressed in harder circumstances if it's more pronounced, right? And so tomorrow I'm going to be talking about the last of the three that we talked about today. I'm going to be talking about more details, because I think I can make the case for why regulation by competition is much better than legislation by the state. And so that's what I'm going to be trying to convince you of tomorrow. And so tune in for that, because I think it's going to be just as interesting as today, if not more.
Thank you very much for watching, and goodbye.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.